Today's episode is brought to you by my very first book that has just launched, Find Your Flow. Are you stuck in a perpetual cycle of repeating the same patterns over and over? Do you know there's more to life than just following what you should do? Do you feel foggy in your mind, uninspired by your life? Are you sick of being in survival mode? Let go of your addiction to friction and drama with this practical personal development guide to freeing yourself from limiting beliefs. Learn how to respond to life rather than react and move from surviving to thriving with me. I am so excited to release this book baby out into the world. Find Your Flow is available for pre-order now. Head to the show notes to grab your copy. Hi, I'm Emma Maidment and welcome to the Flow Lane podcast. This is the space to explore what it means to live a life in flow. Through honest conversations and storytelling, we'll explore how to move from friction to flow in all areas of life, covering things from health, well-being, spirituality, parenting, relationships, and so much more. This is a podcast to empower you to live fiercely from your heart so that you can create a powerfully aligned life in the flow lane. Let's flow to it. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Flow Lane podcast. I am your host, Emma Maidment. Today I'm joined by a dear friend of mine, Talia, and we are diving into all things preconception, the menstrual cycle, and women's health and hormones. This is a really, really great chat, particularly for women, but also for partners to be able to understand the cycles and the flow that women move through on a regular basis. Talia also shares about her journey with miscarriage as well as future pregnancies and her entire preconception journey. Talia is a clinical nutritionist. She is a mama of two beautiful boys and an author of a recently published book called Nourishing Those Who Nurture. And we'll talk about that a little bit as well. So thanks so much for coming along, Talia.
Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to actually, you know, we catch up with our little bambinos a fair bit and have a little chit chat amongst running after them. But it's actually so nice to just sit down with you and have a chat child free. Although it took a bit to get here, but we're here.
Both of us. It was like texting, okay, I've put one down. I've got this going on. I mean, you've got two. I've just got one. So this is real life, right? This is the mum balance and juggle of, you know, trying to fit in time to do stuff like this and to be able to work and to be able to connect, but also to be really present with our babies. So for everyone listening about how we made this happen, lots of juggling, lots of other people involved and partners watching children.
Yeah. And I think, I don't know about you, but I have one down asleep at the moment. So I was like, perfect, one down.
Yeah, one down. Well, I've just got one. So he woke up just before we started. So I was like, see you, bye.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So Talia and I met many years ago in Melbourne, and it's actually, I think, so beautiful that we've circled back around and are living somewhat close-ish to each other during this phase of motherhood. We're both, I mean, you're a couple of years into it already, but we've both got your second little Bubba Oka's similar age to Rivi. He's a few months older, but it's really just nice to be able to meet someone at a certain phase in your life. So we met when Talia was running a raw chocolate. Actually, you just started making chocolates and doing Made with Raw Love. And we kind of followed that journey together through, you know, the business world and that wellness scene in Melbourne. And then you and your partner moved up north and, you know, like 7 years later, I followed. And now here we are in this motherhood phase and we've circled back around. And that's why I have a circle tattoo on my wrist, because I just love how life really moves in those rhythms. You know, it loops you back around, which is really cool. And I think, you know, that's what we want to talk about a lot today is cycles. Ah, what an accidental segue.
Totally. Yeah.
So Talia is like the queen of all things women's health. That's what she specializes in her clinical work. And then also being a mum of two, it comes from a real lived place. So we're going to dive into a conversation today, predominantly around preconception and understanding your menstrual cycle and why that's really important, I guess, in that lead up phase to becoming a mama and how that filters through into your postpartum experience. But I thought we'd just start with maybe if you can just kind of introduce yourself a little bit, like what it is that you do, why you're so passionate about women's health and the journey that's kind of led you to where you are.
Yeah, totally. I love that too. I love your little story about our coming together and how, and I was just thinking it probably has been like a 7-year cycle too. And I love like the 7-year cycles of life. So I actually have been a nutritionist for, well, I graduated in 2008. So it's been quite some time, but it did take me a while to find my niche in women's health. And I actually stumbled across it through my own urgency, I would say, to actually support some things that were going on in my life. So I had basically from when I first started cycling, which I started a little bit later than a lot of my friends. I started when I was 15. And basically from then until my mid-20s, had really painful cycles, literally every cycle. So it's classified as dysmenorrhea when you have really painful periods. I also had an absence of a cycle for about 18 months in my early 20s, which is classified as amenorrhea. I was diagnosed with PCOS in my early 20s. I had pretty bad hormonal acne through that and a lot of gut issues, which really actually started when I was really, really young. But gut health wasn't so talked about then. I guess that's been something that's come around probably in the last 5 to 10 years. So when I first graduated, I was working at a health food store as well. And I basically was seeing clients just, I guess, more so getting healthy. And I, being in Melbourne, there was definitely an emphasis on the physique side of things. So I definitely did have clients coming to me who were wanting to lose weight and all that type of thing. And I kind of felt, you know, I was living what I wanted to do, but I also felt something wasn't quite right. And then when I went on my journey of healing myself through everything that was going on with me, which was supported by a couple of other practitioners as well, I was like, wow, I just remember being so gobsmacked at what I was learning about the menstrual cycle and period health that hadn't been taught to me. And here I was in my mid-20s and I'd been cycling for about 10 years at this time. And, you know, I was learning that there were 4 phases to a menstrual cycle, which I'm sure some people listening now are going to be like, what, really? Like, this is the stuff that, you know, is the fundamental of what's going on with us. And those 4 phases are very different in terms of your digestion, your emotionally how you're feeling, physically how you're feeling, and what's going on with the hormones. It's, and the endocrine system is a full body system. So when something's happening, it's not just happening in the reproductive system in relation to the yoni and the ovaries and the uterus. It's actually a full body system. So I just remember, you know, once I started diving down that hole, it's not the right word, but once I started diving down that area, that sounded, well, yeah. Once I started diving,
just keep going, this is going like, really well.
Oh, that's great. We'll just use that. We'll use that. I was just, I loved it. So I just spent, you know, I remember for Christmas and birthdays, I was just like, it, you know, with my family, I was like, just any book on period health you can get me. I was doing lots of study in any area that I could. And so that's basically what I guess guided me to where I am now. And then, of course, like you mentioned, you know, I've gone on a preconception journey. I've gone on a pregnancy journey with 2 beautiful boys and also a spirit baby that I miscarried at 14 weeks. I've had 2 postpartum journeys. So a lot of the support I do now, I only focus on women's health now, and a lot of it is in the preconception, the pregnancy, the postpartum, but also in like perimenopause and other areas as well, PCOS. And I just love it. You know, it just is, I feel so passionate about it. I feel so grateful to be in this space. It's definitely like my 2 boys are definitely my life purpose, but this work is also definitely part of my life purpose. And once I started specializing in this area, I was like, oh, this is it. This is my fit. And yeah, I just feel so grateful.
And you found your flow within your flow.
Totally. Yes. And funny that, you know, I love the name of your podcast too. And actually I run some workshops, and when we first started running the workshops, which is around about 5 years ago now, with Living Harmoniously with a beautiful friend of mine, we used to call the first workshop In Your Flow, or no, sorry, flowing with your four phases. And it really is about flowing with the phases of the menstrual cycle.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's so interesting that, you know, you even as a clinical nutritionist, going into that, you're like, hey, I didn't have a lot of understanding about this. And this is something that, you know, health is an area that you're studying, but also as a woman, it just continues to blow me away how much we're not educated about this stuff. And it's, you know, you kind of have that period talk with your mom where it's like, you're going to bleed once a month and here's a pad or a tampon or like whatever. And it's seen as this inconvenience, you know, and the words and the language we use around that, you know, like there's so many different auntie flows come to town, I'm on my rags, blah, 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 you know, and it's always, not always, but often seen through a really negative lens of, and I think it's quite interesting because in other cultures around the world, it's celebrated, you know, like when a woman has their first bleed, there's a whole ceremony and ritual around that. And then, you know, depending on which culture you're talking about, there's a lot of different ways that it's celebrated and women are supported through those phases of their cycle. Whereas our culture is very much just like shove a tampon in and get on with life. And which is sad, because I think for me, one of the game changers in understanding the different phases of the cycle is also understanding how you can kind of like biohack in that sense. Like I know when I'm going to be feeling more creative. I know, you know, when I'm going to not be so creative or, you know, really wanting to go inwards. And so I can ideally, well, it was a lot easier before having a baby, but try and, you know, plan and structure my life around that. So maybe we can just like really quickly give an overview of the four phases, and then we'll dive into, I guess, you know, preconception health from there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that you said that, just, you know, it is about just honoring each phase as it is, and also taking from that phase what is predominant there and supporting that, which is like an incredible way of just flowing with it all too. So for those who are unaware, there's the four phases of the cycle, which we've briefly discussed. So the phases are follicular, ovulation, luteal, and menstruation, in that order. And this was something too that I remember learning, and I was like, oh my God, I always thought, and some women probably still believe, that you bleed first, right? Because I guess it was the noticeable part of the cycle that was often talked about, but a lot of women aren't actually even taught just the basic fundamental that we actually have to ovulate first and then we bleed. And this is why in postpartum, a lot of women, well, not a lot, but there definitely is a percentage of women that fall pregnant while breastfeeding before they've actually bled. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh my gosh, I didn't even have my period. It's like, well, you did have your period, but you didn't have the bleed side of your period because you hadn't ovulated yet. And when you ovulated, oops, you got pregnant.
Surprise. Yeah. What do they call it? Irish twins.
Irish twins. Yeah, the ones that are close by. Yeah. So the follicular phase is the beginning. So basically, I guess, even though we're looking at it as the beginning, if we want to think of it as when does it actually start, the first day is day one, which is the day after you stop bleeding. That's day one of your cycle. And let's just talk in approximates here. Mm-hmm. Roughly that phase goes for about 7 to 10 days. So that phase is roughly 7 to 10 days. Then we go into our ovulation phase, and the ovulation phase is when the egg is released. So some women may feel that when the egg is released, or they may notice cervical mucus around that time, or they may notice their energy really increased and vibrant during that time. Some women actually can get a little bit manic during that time, depending on their disposition prior. So the ovulation phase, yeah, is around 3 to 4 days. Then we have the luteal phase. And I guess this is the phase that is usually, you know, there's a lot of derogatory language around this phase, but I actually love this phase. So this phase is around 10 to 14 days, and some may know it as when the PMS starts to come in. So what's happening during this phase is there's a drop in our hormones, and there's also the predominant hormone here is progesterone, which does kind of rise and fall again. And it can mean that we feel more emotional than normal. And our energy is starting to wane during this time, but it actually can be so incredible, this phase, because for me, I believe it actually, it shows you the muck that is occurring in your life and how you're actually going to visit that. It also is a really creative phase. So it's a really beautiful time to be more creative. It's a time that we can potentially nurture ourselves more. There's some really incredible attributes to this phase, which I think are missed when we don't have deeper knowledge of what's actually going on. And then we go into our menstruation phase, which is our bleeding phase, which is around 3 to 7 days. So one of the, I guess, the biggest part to all this, and if you have a look on a graph, which you can simply look on the computer, if you just Google a hormonal graph of my menstrual phases, you can see the rise and fall of the hormones during the phase. And the three dominant hormones are estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone. And you can see that at every single day of the month, say we're talking monthly cycles, that you are significantly different because those hormones are significantly different. There is not one day that is the same as the next. And so we can't expect women to be the same one day that they are the next. You know, in 1 week we may be feeling a certain way about something, and in the next week we might be feeling completely different. And that is because of what is going on with our hormones. So just to, I guess, cap that, one thing that we often say when we run our workshops is if there's a major life decision that's occurring, we recommend waiting a whole cycle before you actually make that decision, because you'll be able to see it from all the different colorings of all the four phases, which I think is really epic. That's as so women cool. That we have. Yeah, I think that we have that opportunity is really amazing. So
you're almost
I think
seeing it from like four different perspectives.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Really cool. And I think once we have that understanding and deeper knowledge, we, you know, I see this in clinic all the time, you know, women coming to me at the start and maybe having some derogatory language around their cycle. And then once they actually get a deeper understanding of it, actually seeing like the true magic and potential that their cycles have.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, if you think about culturally, a lot of women are celebrated as like the wise women and going to the women's tents and these kinds of the wisdom that's in the female body. And I it's never really occurred to me until you just, the way you just explained it, then it makes so much sense. You're seeing it from four different phases. You're seeing it through four different lenses throughout that cycle, whether it's 28 days a month, whatever. And that gives you so much more insight and perspective, because we're not the same. I mean, our cells are changing every day. We're constantly in this renewal process. And I think when you really learn to honor and understand your flow or your cycle, you can kind of float, you know, just keep using the word flow. You can kind of flow through that with this sense of grace, but also just really deeply understanding what it is that's occurring. And I think enrolling your partner in that process is a really great thing. At least that's been my experience prior to, conceiving. It was almost like in those moments where I'd forget where I was up to in my cycle, my partner Tyson would remind me. You know, like he would notice the shift in my behavior or in the way I was responding to certain like decisions and things like that. And he'd be like, is your period coming in a couple of days? Or like, are you ovulating right now because you've just really gone hard at the gym or whatever it is? Like he could really pick up with that cycle purely just by observing how I was and how I was kind of showing up in all aspects of life, which is really cool. And I think it's something that can help within a relationship to gain a deeper understanding of your partner if they're enrolled in that process as well, rather than it just being like, oh, she's on her period, like don't talk to her, is really, really understanding that process and that cycle that women go through.
Absolutely. And you just reminded me then of Lissy, who I run Living Harmoniously with, and her partner. They've got quite a few kids. They're a blended family. They've got quite a few kids between them both. And she always says how the first 2 weeks, which are the time that you actually have more energy and maybe you're able to do a little bit more than what you potentially are in those second 2 weeks, she actually stands up in their household and she'll, you know, do the dinners and kind of get things happening. And then in those other 2 weeks, he actually stands up a little bit more and supports her so that she can focus more on what's actually going on in her body and her feelings and all of that. And I just thought, when I remember her saying that at one of our first workshops, and I was like, how amazing, you know, that they have this flow occurring between them. And yeah, I think in whatever support situation you're in, firstly, it's talking about it openly, right? And then once it's talked about openly, which is something I think we're still working with now, that's the stigma behind it and being able to speak about it freely. But once that's, you know, once you've kind of gotten past that, then yeah, having that support network in whatever way that looks for you.
I love that. And that makes so much sense as well, in that, you know, each partner doesn't also always want to be the one doing all the cooking and doing all the things. You know, if you take on that role too much, you end up kind of burning out and getting a bit resentful. So being able to find that balance based on your cycle and where you're at, I mean, that's a dream. I love that. That's really clever. I'm like, I'm going to use that in my house. Tick. Write that one down. And yeah. I think as well, you know, the derogatory words and things we associate with our period is because a lot of women experience, you know, quite a lot of pain, quite a lot of symptoms that I think are so normalized, which is kind of sad. You know, we just like, just take some Ponstan and deal with your painful period. And it's like this really normal thing to have period pain and to, you know, be really, really irrational and emotional at that time. And, you know, I've had a few Chinese medicine perspectives and Ayurvedic people on this podcast so far, and we've spoken about, you know, how your cycle, you know, is really an indication of your health, and that it shouldn't be something that's causing you, you know, huge amounts of pain or imbalance in your mood. Like, obviously there's subtle shifts and changes, but, you know, how has that kind of shown up in your own journey? I mean, you mentioned that you had PCOS and acne and other different things around your cycle. Like, how is that really for you, finding that flow within the four phases and I guess balancing your hormones? Would that be kind of what the underpinning imbalance is? You
know what I mean? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, firstly, just to add on to something you said there as well, it's interesting that these things are so normalized and continue to be, particularly the pain ones. So even for me, you know, it took me, gosh, maybe eight to 10 years to actually realize that the pain wasn't normal, and that even though my doctors were just prescribing Naprogesic and all of this, and the pain was so bad that a doctor actually said to me once, because I wanted to, I guess, get onto it before it actually took hold, because it would mean often that I would have a day of school or a day of work, whatever that was. And they were like, okay, maybe you should take the Naprogesic 7 days before you're actually due for your bleed.
Whoa.
So I was like, in my head, I remember just thinking, and I grew up, you know, quite a holistic family. And in my head, I'm thinking, okay, so I'm going to be on Naprogesic for like 10 days of my cycle every month. That just does not seem right to me. Mm. So yeah, I mean, the fact that we normalize these things are quite sad, because like you said, whichever perspective you come from, TCM or Ayurvedic, which I can't talk to directly because they're not things that I've personally studied, but they all, yeah, do mention about the health report card. And it definitely is, any type of symptom is a sign of something that's underlying, which again, how awesome is that? So painful periods, spotting, brown stagnation at the start or the end of your cycle, clotting, really heightened emotions, all those things, there's definitely more, but that's all I can think of right now. All of those things are a sign that there is something underlying. And hormonal health or balancing, I guess, is the key, but there's definitely a root cause that's underneath that. So often we might be looking, there might be something going on with the liver, there might be something going on with the kidneys, there might be something going on with the gut. For me personally, it was definitely a lot around the gut that was occurring. So actually, once I started healing my gut, then all those things started balancing themselves out, which was really cool. So that was my root cause that I supported and worked on. But yeah, it's pretty incredible that, you know, it's those layers to the menstrual cycle. It's not all about what's happening just there. It's the layers underneath and the different aspects of the body or system that, once in balance, the menstrual cycle should be fine.
Yeah, I was the same. It was my gut health that really needed looking at in order to, and kind of as a byproduct of that, I noticed that it was, without even trying, my cycle just suddenly balanced itself out, you know, and the symptoms subsided, the acne subsided, all that kind of stuff, when I worked on what was maybe perceived as a different area of the body, you know, as we know, it's holistic, right? It's all one body. It all works together in this beautiful synergistic relationship. And a big part of that gut healing for me, and I know that, you know, you've shared a similar journey of, you know, I think when we met, we were both pretty hardcore, like vegans and into raw food and really down that road. And I still love a lot of that food. But for me, a really big shift was like starting to have bone broths and things like this. And it took me a long time to embrace that. But I noticed such a shift in my gut health. Was your experience similar when you know, was it like a lot of diet stuff you were doing or herbs or?
It was, I guess there were a few different areas to it, but definitely the animal foods for me was definitely supportive. And I had come from like nearly 20 years of not having really meat at all, the odd tiny bit of meat. And then, doing the raw vegan, which, you know, there was a place in my journey for that for sure. Mm-hmm. And it did give me some type of detox, but it definitely did actually cause some other issues as well in like spleen deficiency and that definitely did have some flow on effects for me. But definitely bone broth is just incredible. Even now, it's something that is a staple in my diet. And I actually, whenever I have it, I can just really feel how much it's nurturing me. But also for me, I guess it was taking out a lot of foods that were causing me inflammation that might have been, you know, not necessarily foods that would cause other people inflammation, like your top allergens, but were personally causing me inflammation. Also having a look at some accumulation of heavy metals that I may have had. Also having a look at what I was actually putting on my skin that could have been affecting my digestion as well, just because of the toxic load of that. So and I also did, the most predominant person for me was a Chinese medicine practitioner. So I was definitely doing some herbs through him as well. But I guess there were a few. Gut health is so huge in relation to all the areas for it that are relevant to it. So there were a few different areas, but food definitely was a key part.
Yeah, I also worked with a Chinese medicine practitioner through that kind of similar journey as well. And it made such a difference having acupuncture as well as the herbs and just, embracing, I guess, more warm, slow cooked foods and meats, which took me mentally a long time to get involved with. And now it's a staple. Like this morning I was just straining out bone broth. Like I just do it every week. It's just what I do. Whereas if you had told me that 10 years ago, I'd be like, what? That's crazy. Which I think is a beautiful testament to like what you were just saying when, you know, that raw vegan, I don't even want to call it a phase, that part of your life, you know, it formed part of your journey and your story. And I think is nothing's ever good or bad. It's just what's serving you in that moment and where are you at? And I guess, and you know, as you get older and you move towards, okay, maybe I want to start preparing to have a baby. Obviously surprises definitely happen, but there is, I guess, a more conscious conception or however you want to call it, but preparing your body in that preconception phase. And, you know, you touched on it just before, but a big part of that is detoxing the heavy metals and, you know, looking at your own gut health, your own health. I mean, I know for myself, it was like, how can I be in the best physical shape, emotional shape? Like I did a lot of my preconception journey was very much like, how can I heal my own inner child and kind of go down that path, but then also looking at the nutrition side of things. And I guess from that perspective of knowing that, you know, from my understanding, it's like, okay, well, if I do get pregnant, it's going to be a huge load on my body. So how am I supporting myself to best be able to ultimately, you know, sustain that and then recover from that? So can you take us through, I guess, when your preconception journey started for yourself personally, and then also maybe what, you know, the clients and things you work with, and then what are the areas that people can be looking at when they start to think preconception? Because I don't think it necessarily has to be something that you decide to do, like, okay, cool, I want to get pregnant in 6 months, so I've got to start this now. You know, being fertile and having that that journey, I think, can happen many, many years even before. I mean, what's the recommended kind of time frame for that? Today's episode is brought to you by my very first book that has just launched, Find Your Flow. Are you stuck in a perpetual cycle of repeating the same patterns over and over? Do you know there's more to life than just following what you should do? Do you feel foggy in your mind, uninspired by your life? Are you sick of being in survival mode? Let go of your addiction to friction and drama with this practical personal development guide to freeing yourself from limiting beliefs. Learn how to respond to life rather than react and move from surviving to thriving with me. I am so excited to release this book baby out into the world. Find Your Flow is available for pre-order now. Head to the show notes to grab your copy.
Yeah, well, I think it's such an awesome thing to be discussing, and it's discussed a little bit more now, which is amazing. When I went on my preconception journey, which was, oh gosh, timeline here, maybe like 5 to 6 years ago, it wasn't so openly discussed, but it definitely is now, which is really cool. The maturation of the egg that is released is roughly, like, the timeline is roughly 12 months. Ideally, it would be amazing to see women in that 12 months prior to conceiving. But I have to admit that that's often not the case, because usually I see women who, I do have some clients who come in prior to conceiving, but they want to be conceiving in like at least 3 to 6 months. You know, 12 months seems like quite a fair way away from them. And then I also, on the flip side, often have women who are already on their preconception journey and are just needing a little bit more support with that. But I guess the largest maturation of the egg is 90 days, and the sperm is similar, it's 72 days, so not too dissimilar. So really, I mean, as a minimum, I would love to be seeing partners 3 months prior to them conceiving. So for me, the journey was a little bit longer, and it was probably because of my background and how much I just loved, you know, the health and wellness space, and also the complications I guess I'd had with my cycle previously. So my journey was roughly 18 months all up. And yeah, there were definitely different elements to that journey. So, and they're very similar to what I guess I support clients on. So one of the, and I guess the coolest part of this too, is that I like to think of it as a time of refinement, but you're just bettering yourself, right? So it's just an amazing opportunity to actually be in a better space yourself in terms of your overall health. So I guess one of the things I did similar to you was I definitely did a lot of self-work, but that had been something that I'd been kind of working on maybe 5 or so years prior to that. I started going in the space of, you know, meditation, a lot of workshops around self, a lot of workshops around the inner child and about those first few years of my life. I definitely did a little bit of work in the plant medicine space as well, but they're not things that I support people on at all. But I definitely, you know, I think those things are absolutely incredible in terms of just self, in terms of self-development or awareness. And I have to admit that once you have children, and I'm talking solely for my journey, there's definitely those things are just occurring on a day-to-day basis with my children, and often I kind of lag behind and I'm like, oh, I need to be in a better space myself so that I can show up for my children in the best possible way. And, you know, you don't get to go on a weekend retreat and do those things. So it's just a beautiful time to be doing them in that preconception phase as well.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like once you have the kids, all that stuff, I mean, for a few years at least, definitely gets pressed pause. You know, it's like, oh, it'd be nice to go on a yoga retreat, but give me like a couple of years and then I'll be there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Do it while you can.
So on the... Totally, totally. So I guess on the more physical realm, which is what I support women on, one of the biggest things was balancing my gut health and my hormones, which we've talked about. I also focused on my liver and my kidney in terms of my organs, and actually my colon. So just to briefly go over those bits for me personally, because I had a lot of gut stuff, there was also colon stuff. So I was doing a lot of colon hydrotherapy during that time. I was doing a lot of coffee enemas during that time. And I had the support of professionals doing that, which was great.
Just in terms of stuffing coffee up your butt and hoping for the best.
definitely go and get some support with that. And it's a controversial topic. Some practitioners are not for it at all. For me, I found it really beneficial as just a bit of a cleansing. And I think in the Western world, the way that we eat, there is always going to be some element of putrefaction or fermentation in the gut and colon. And I just, for me, it was really great to just have a bit of a cleanse of those areas. So for liver health, I did, and for my liver and kidney health, I did do some specific herbs that were recommended to me by other practitioners, because that's not my forte. And also just, I guess in the preconception phase, it's gentle, right? It's really gentle detoxing, because we don't want to be stripping the body of absolutely everything, because we want to be going into that conception feeling abundant and full of life as well. So if we're just stripping everything away, then there's nothing really to support us through that journey and postpartum, which this is the other awesome part of the preconception journey, is that it will support you in the postpartum as well. So women who have actually, you know, started harboring that beforehand should have a better postpartum journey, because their bodies are more prepared. And with the liver as well, I did some castor oil packs, which again, you know, important to have a practitioner support you through that. But the basis of that is just putting, and you can do it over the womb space as well, putting some castor oil on the womb and liver, and then putting on, I used to just put on like an old t-shirt or some cloth, and putting on a compression pack over that, a hot compression pack, and the castor oil is absorbed into those organs and actually works as a detoxification. So that's just a pretty simple, cheap, easy way of detoxing those organs. And then the kidneys, I guess the biggest aggravating factor for the kidneys is stress, and it's something that is, and even for infertility in general, stress is, I guess, the number one aggravating factor. So you could probably speak to that more so than I can, but for me it was doing, I mean, I had been doing yoga already for a long time, but it was more taking that yoga back to a gentler practice and doing a lot more meditation. And in my meditation too, doing a lot of, I don't know what you would actually call it, but like I call it envision meditation, where I'm actually envisioning the conception and the pregnancy. Is there a name for that?
Visualizing manifestation. Tapping into, it's a really beautiful practice as well, of like, you know, connecting with your higher self and calling in really what you want. You know, for me as well, I was communicating with that little soul, and, you know, and getting to that point, like I had a few moments, I was like, hey, I'm not quite ready yet. Like, just, you know, I could kind of feel it in the ether. Just stay there for a little while. And then like, okay, cool. Like I'm, and it was literally the moment that I kind of said, you know, in those moments of communicating, like, okay, cool, I'm starting to feel ready. But in my like logical timeline, I was like, in 6 months. And then it was like, boom, as soon as I said it, there it is. Like, oh, okay.
Baby was like,
be careful what you wish for.
Yeah, baby got that little, I think I'm ready. I'm there. Yeah. I'm there. She's opened the door.
It's like, okay, I love that. That's a powerful practice. Be careful with that one. Yeah. So you're manifesting, calling in, communicating, whatever you want to call it.
And I guess the biggest part, which comes from all those areas too, is the hormonal balancing or support. And definitely the detoxification of the home was a big part of that in terms of, and I had done that prior to the 18 months, but I do encapsulate that in my preconception journey and also what I share with other women. But that was probably more that had been going on for at least 6 or 7 years prior to that. But that was getting rid of all the chemicals in the home. So getting rid of all the cleaning products in the home, getting rid of all the skincare. And for me, I absolutely cringe to admit this, but I was like a fake tan, I don't even know what you'd call it. I was just, yeah, an Oompa Loompa for most of, most of my Melbourne years. And I used to spray that can on me. And I even remember my mum saying, like, should you be wearing a mask while you're doing that? And I was like, no, it's fine. And now I look back and I'm like, oh, my God, the amount of chemicals I was probably just spraying all over myself. So, yeah, that was a really big part too. And the coolest thing with that is, and I think some people think, oh, my gosh, that's too overwhelming. My recommendation is always finish a product and then throw it out rather than doing a huge overhaul, which can be really overwhelming. And the coolest part is a lot of the products that you switch it for actually generally, one, are cheaper and they're definitely more natural. So they're going to help balance your hormonal system because a lot of those products are endocrine disruptors. A really cool app that I have, and I don't have many apps on my phone, but one of them is called Chemical Maze.
Oh, yes.
And you can actually... such a good app. You can actually, you know, if you ever look at the back of a product, even some of the natural ones, they'll often have ingredients and generally they're the ones that you can't pronounce. And if you look them up, they'll have the Chemical Maze. It just gives you like a smiley face or a sad face or a, yeah, a few different faces. And there's like green, yellow, and red. And it also will tell you what potentially that product or that ingredient, sorry, will cause. So yeah, I mean, and I guess another part of that, particularly with the skincare, is that once you actually get your hormonal system balanced and your gut health really amazing, that in terms of what you're putting on your skin, for me personally, it was a lot less. I didn't really have to wear makeup anymore. I didn't have to conceal all that acne. My skin was shining a lot more than what it had before. I didn't smell as bad in terms of deodorant. Like, all those things that were kind of expelling from my skin beforehand due to the toxicity that I was continuing putting on them. It's like this vicious cycle. Once I started kind of working all that out, it actually was, yeah, hardly used any of those products.
I agree. Mine's been really similar in that you kind of get to that point now where I'm like, I barely, people ask me, what's your skincare routine? I'm like, not really much. Like maybe a serum, yeah, if I remember. Same. Like, and the other thing, yes, I love about when you, you know, completely detox, and I feel like that's a whole episode we could do around, you know, toxic things in the home and endocrine disruptors and whatnot. But I actually said to Tice the other day, I was like, River gotten into a certain cupboard. And I was like, you know what? It's actually so great that we have nothing in this house that is potentially, I mean, it's probably not great for him to like drink vinegar or whatever. Like, obviously I'm not going to encourage him to play with the cleaning products, but I had that moment of like, yeah, if it did happen and he accidentally opened a lid or spilled something on himself or, you know, got a little bit in his mouth, I wouldn't be panicking as much as if it was, you know, some hectic cleaning product that's got all these ingredients and all these side effects. I'd be like, okay, maybe that wasn't ideal, but it, you know, at least it's not this. You know, I think if I wouldn't give it to him and I wouldn't want him around it, then I definitely don't want to be having it around the house and around us. And yeah, and it's a really great point because I think, you know, we do talk a lot about preconception health and people instantly think like, okay, diet, exercise, but that lifestyle element is really something that, you know, I'm so glad that you went into because, yeah, the stuff we put on our skin, what we're putting in our homes, that can often be like the missing piece for a lot of people as well. Of, you know, you can eat all the organic food and whatever, but if you're dousing your kitchen in God knows what cleaning products and then spraying on, you know, all these nasty deodorants and then packing your face full of, you know, whatever makeups and stuff, it does have an effect. Our skin's, you know, our largest organ, it's absorbing everything. So I think that's a really beautiful practice that, yeah, I guess leads you through to then being a parent and not having to worry as much about your children, you know, smothering themselves in your foundation or whatever.
Totally. I mean, I love that you mentioned the vinegar thing because we had the exact same thing about a couple of weeks ago. My youngest, who's one, was, we have vinegar in a spray bottle and he got the bottle out of the cupboard. We don't have any child lock things happening in our house, probably should this time around because he is an absolute menace, but he was sucking on the end of the bottle and I was like, oh, shivers. And then I was like, oh, it's just vinegar. And then Scott, my partner, and I had this like little laugh and we're like, oh my gosh, remember when our parents, love you guys by the way, but remember when they used to give us like white vinegar in a little cups and we would dip our chips into that? Yes. And I was like, well, that's basically what we're cleaning with now, so yeah, it'll be sweet, we're okay.
Yeah, seriously. I smothered my hot chip eating as a kid, so it can't be that bad.
And then again, just on that note as well, with everything, I mean, like we said, you know, stress is the biggest aggravating factor in relation to infertility. And I think we always think of stress in terms of mental stress, but those products and even what we're doing in terms of our output, like exercise and all those things are additional stress. And the biggest issue with that in terms of the menstrual cycle is progesterone is one of the hormones, which we talked about, and progesterone is crucial to conception because it's, even if there is, so progesterone works with the uterine wall lining. So implantation won't occur, or it can occur, but it won't hold if there's not enough progesterone in the system. Mm-hmm. And the reason I'm linking progesterone and stress is that cortisol is the stress hormone that is produced in our body. Mm-hmm. And our body produces a certain amount of that. But if it needs to produce more, which in a lot of cases in the Western world now it does, it actually steals progesterone to create more cortisol. So then it's taking that progesterone that should be working with our regular hormonal system and endometrial lining, and it's actually producing more stress hormone rather than doing what it needs to do with our endometrial lining. So, yeah, I think when we think of stress, not to overwhelm anyone, but it's really good to look at it from all those various avenues. And even, I guess, in this day and age, what we're taking in terms of our screens and TV and all that stuff, like, is this creating stress in my life? And if so, unplug.
Yeah. And that's a big part of, you know, when people learn to meditate, at least in the technique that I teach, we often go through this process of unstressing, which is releasing deep stress that's held in the nervous system. And that was a big thing both for Tyson and I in our preconception journeys, was being really aware of, like, okay, cool, we might be living a relatively like stress-free life now, but there's still years and years of stress in our system that needs to be released in some way, that needs to be gone essentially. And so, like, this big part of meditating in the way that we do is that it releases that deeper stresses that are held onto by the nervous system. And I didn't know that about the progesterone. That makes so much sense. And is so, like, it's so interesting to me when I talk to people that like get the sciencey side of stuff. Cause I'm like, oh yeah, like that makes total sense to, you know, the layperson like me, like, oh duh, that makes, yeah, I love that. It's kind of like it's taking from something else in order to, and that's the body trying to balance itself, right? You know, it's just, but it's doing it in a way of like, okay, I'm not getting what I need from the external or the internal, so I'm just going to take it from this other thing to, you know, it's like the insides aren't working in harmony, I guess you could say, which is why call your stuff living harmoniously.
So
you've kind of gone on that preconception journey, you know, you've done the detoxing, you're doing the gut health stuff. And then at what point do you think, okay, I'm ready to conceive? Like, obviously you've been mapping your cycle, you're understanding it, like kind of when you're going to ovulate, you know, at what point did you just know that you were ready?
I went month by month. So I really wanted to, like, I guess 18 months felt like a long time too. And I really wanted to have a child. I found my partner, my knight in shining armor. I definitely don't always refer to him as that. I'd found him and I was like, yeah, I really want to conceive, but I wanted to feel the best version of myself. So each month I was mapping how I was feeling in relation to my menstrual cycle and therefore my overall health and also what was going on. So by the time I did conceive my first child, I didn't have PCOS symptoms at all. My hormonal acne wasn't there. I wasn't having any dysmenorrhea at all, which for me was huge. So, yeah, I remember actually saying to a friend around that time, I feel like the healthiest that I've felt. And I was early 30s at that stage. And I was like, I actually feel the best I've ever felt. So to me, that was a key indication of like, okay, I'm ready.
Yeah. And then bada bang, bada boom, there's a baby.
And then, yeah. So the first time I conceived, I actually did miscarry, which I think is important just to briefly touch on. You know, even though I had done all that preconception work, there is an element of all of this that is probably unknown to us. And I actually really love that. that there's something higher than all of that as well. So in my head, I guess there was a bit of ego, and there was big lessons in that miscarriage that I'm super grateful for at the time, obviously a lot of grief, but I look back on that and now see how that was such a vital part of my journey in conception. And I don't think I would have had, I've had two incredible home births, and I don't think I would have had those incredible home births if, for me personally, if I hadn't have had that miscarriage. But yeah, it, it made me realize that there was an element outside of what I could control, which was really
that's a really powerful realization.
I was really grateful for that lesson. Again, not at the time, but you know, I can look back on it now and really recognize it for all its amazingness.
And thank you for sharing that, because I do, I think people can listen to this as well and be like, well, I'm doing all the things and like it's just not happening for me. It's like you were doing all the things, right? And like you said, sometimes there's just something else at play that we can't fathom in our humanness. And so what was the, the gap then? Did you give yourself a little bit of time? Obviously you were feeling really ready and then you had the miscarriage. What was that process like in terms of, you know, a little bit of space before conceiving again? Did you kind of go on that same preconception journey?
Yeah, great question. So I did wait another 6 months because I wanted to wait so that that largest maturation of the egg is three months or 90 days. So I did want to wait for two of those, which again, obviously then lengthened our preconception journey. And, you know, there was such, that was a real mental part of that for me because in my head, and because I miscarried at 14 weeks as well, I had something that's called a missed miscarriage. So the baby actually passed probably around 8 weeks, but my body was holding on to it for quite some time. And I didn't have any scans in that initial pregnancy, so I didn't actually realize until that 14 weeks until I started to bleed. But, yeah, so in my head, I guess there was a real mental part of that that was like, oh, my gosh, I should be in my second trimester, but I am not even pregnant at all. So that was challenging for me for sure, but I'm really grateful that I waited that 6 months personally, because I actually came out of that miscarriage somewhat anemic because I'd had such a big bleed. And so for me, because I'd done all of the detoxing prior, it was really about building for me in that 6 months. So really building back that blood, building back those, that iron and zinc that I'd lost in that miscarriage, and also just building myself as a whole. So that was really, that 6 months, there was absolutely no form of detoxification occurring. It was purely just building. And the same thing when I conceived my second, well, I guess if you look at it as my third child, my second living child, Oka, there was, I was breastfeeding at the time. Luca was nearly two, and we knew we wanted another baby, so it was another conscious conception. But it was all about building again. There was no detoxification at all. I think maybe I did the odd lemon water in the morning to help detoxify the liver, but that was kind of as harsh as the detoxing went.
Yeah, and I guess that's because breastfeeding takes, you know, so much from your body, which is why you can see, you know, that women that do get pregnant quite quickly after giving birth, you know, that there is that higher chance of postpartum depletion, really, because your body's just like, I'm trying to do all the things. It's a lot to grow a human, like far out.
So much. And I think even as women, we kind of sometimes forget that. Like, I've got a beautiful friend at the moment who's pregnant and living on the same land as we are. And at the end of the day, she's like, oh gosh, I'm just so exhausted. And I'm like, darling, you're growing a human. But I think we kind of forget that, and that's actually huge. What that encompasses. Yeah, it is a massive undertaking, and I mean, incredible undertaking too, but there's so much going on during that time.
Yeah. And I think that's real, a real testament into why that preconception journey can just be something that sets you up. Obviously you're still going to, you know, maybe experience tired days in pregnancy and all those kinds of things, but I think it just gives you maybe a little bit more of a reserve in the tank. You know, you're not coming in from empty. You know, you've kind of got a full tank to work with a little bit. And so just to, I guess, because I'm looking at the time and I'm like, I just want to keep talking about all the things.
But I know, just to, so fun. But we both have children.
I know, we do. We'll do part two. But I guess then, okay, so you've gone through then two postpartum periods. Would you say, and obviously you've done the preconception, so maybe you don't have the full data to make that comparison, but do you think it really makes a difference then in that postpartum period, the work that you did in the lead up, obviously then, you know, during your pregnancy, maintaining, and then moving into that postpartum period, which for some women can be very, very depleting?
Absolutely. I don't think there is any ounce of my body that says that no, it didn't support at all. I would say absolutely it has supported both those postpartum journeys and the fact that I was also breastfeeding while conceiving my third, second living child. And there is actually science to back that up, that the preconception, women who are on that preconception journey generally do have a better chance of potentially not having postnatal depletion. And postnatal depletion affects up to 80% of women, so it's huge, but it's also the severity of it. Where are you on that scale, you know? And sure, I still have days where I can be exhausted. I hit an exhaustion point like a couple of weeks ago, and my little one has just turned one and my other one is 3.5. But I still believe that where I'm at in terms of my health and wellness is supported by what I've done prior, and that even though I still have those moments, of course, and I still sometimes need to check in with myself and not burn my candle at every possible end. Yeah, I think it 100% has supported.
And so that's a big part then of what you share in your book, which you've just released, which is really exciting. Do you want to just quickly kind of take us through, I guess, what the book is about and how, I mean, it's sure. To me, it's knowing you as well. I read it and I'm like, oh, this is just like an accumulation of your passion and knowledge for supporting women. But I think it's also so embodied because it's coming from that place of your own journey as well through, you know, parenting, through early stages of motherhood, really, which is, we say that postpartum period, which I think they think is like, what is it, 6 weeks or something? But I feel like postpartum is really forever, you know, it never ends. Yes. It's just different in the way it is. But yeah, take us through the book.
Totally. So yeah, so the book started, so where are we now? So probably just over 2 years ago now. And the reason why that book came about is because I was and am at the moment, although this year's been a little bit weird, but I am running postpartum workshops called Nurturing the New Mother with another beautiful friend of mine, Esther. And I was in that space and I was just realizing how much, even though we were running these workshops, it was still such an under-supported area in the Western world, and I guess particularly in relation to other countries and how much it's supported there. And there's definitely more knowledge around it now, but it still felt really under-supported, and particularly with a physical tool. So at the end of these workshops, I was like, you know, it was so great, and we were giving these women booklets and yoga sequences, and it all felt really amazing. But I was like, oh, I still feel like there's something kind of missing. So I've co-authored the book with a beautiful friend of mine, Caitlin Prade, who is a doula, a kinesiologist. She has done a lot of work in the wellness space in relation to cooking. And so the book originally started as a recipe book or a cookbook for this space, because there really isn't that many out there. And we wanted something, there were, I guess, key parts to that, in that we wanted the ingredients to be accessible to the women who were buying it. We wanted the recipes to be really easy and accessible. And of course, we wanted them to be recipes that support this really nutrient dense phase of life. So it started as that, but then over the course of the 18 months / 2 years that it took to write the book, which we did in flow with where we were both at in terms of our cycles, which was really lovely. The great aspect of working with women who understand this space, it turned more into like a cookbook / wellness book. So the first half of the book is all, I guess, wellness related in terms of information around how to support healing a C-section, how to prepare your partner, what a baby blessing might look like, some support tools. We actually do talk about castor oil packs and rebozo, some support tools from other traditions that might be really beneficial of this time. I guess the things that we both put in that book, and we literally have written the book almost 50-50, which is really beautiful as well, is things that we see that are potentially missing from society in the Western world and maybe used in other societies in relation to supporting the mum, which we think is just so crucial and beneficial. And also the things, I guess, that aren't spoken of so much. So we do talk about what potentially can happen in relation to vaginal changes and libido. And even I remember going into my first postpartum and I was like, oh my God, what is going on down there? And no one speaks about that stuff. So I guess the kind of taboo stuff that isn't so openly spoken about, which I think is so important to chat about.
Absolutely. I think that, and I think when people ask me like, what's the difference between this book and other books that are out there? It's like, this is literally a Bible that covers kind of everything, as you said, and those taboo topics and things that people aren't talking about. And, you know, I think we could do a whole topic on rediscovering your yoni post-birth, because that's a huge topic. But I love that you guys
are still learning in that area.
Yeah, I mean, your whole body changes, your life changes, your hormones change. I mean, everything changes, and it's a huge point in our lives of transition. And I think during transitional points, supporting yourself nutritionally, having recipes that are easy to make, that are fully, you know, supportive of where you're at. Like, I love how you guys break it down by different weeks and, you know, what women really need at that particular point in the postpartum period, nutritionally speaking, is really, really clever. So it's an incredible body of work. I'll pop all the links to the book in the show notes for you guys to have a look at. Far out. We are running out of time. I have loved this chat. I'm so glad that we managed to make it happen. As we're talking, I'm like, oh, I just want to keep talking to you about all the things. So we might have to do episode like take two to go deeper.
Oh my gosh, yeah, we could chat so much. I could feel it. We're both just like, yes, yeah, this is it.
And I just want to like give the background and go into it, you know. And it is, and I love talking to you because you are such a wealth of knowledge, but your passion really shines through. So thank you so much for sharing that. Thank you for your time. I know you're a busy mama of two. But yeah, thank you so much for joining me on the show. And then where's the best place for everyone to find you?
So social media, which look, I have to admit that I'm not on as much as I used to be, which has been really lovely to slightly step back from that stress in my life. but at Luna Holistic Nutrition is my main account. And then you can kind of link to my other accounts through there. So Living Harmoniously, which is the workshops that we run. And then also Nourishing Those Who Nurture, which is the new postpartum book that just came out a couple of months ago. So yeah, they all link from my main account. So you can find me there.
Awesome. And I'll pop the link for that as well below. Thank you.
Thanks, darling. So great to chat to you.
Yeah. Speak to you soon. Thank you so much for joining Talia and I today. I hope you got a lot out of that chat. I know I did. I'm taking so many notes through all of that. She's a wealth of knowledge and I'm so glad to be able to call her a friend. And you should see some of the questions that I ask her myself. So really, really amazing to have Talia on the show. If you enjoyed today's show, please leave me a review. I'd love to hear what you think. You can also share this with a friend who you think needs to hear it. Often we don't know how profound that can be for someone just to hear the words at the right time. So if you feel the call, share it with someone or pop it up on your social media and give me a tag so that I can see. Thank you so much. And I look forward to speaking with you next week.